All this sucks.
How are you? Good, dude. Good. Just getting over COVID here, so.
Oh, you too, huh?
Yeah.
I had it in January. It sucked.
But yeah.
You'll live.
Yeah. No, it's not too bad. I got it over the weekend there, so. No worries, man. I'm just chilling at home. Kids just shipped the kids off to school, so. Well, lady's out shopping, so. House to myself. It's nice.
Yeah. No, that's always good.
Yeah.
I cherish those moments for sure.
Definitely.
Are we doing audio only, or are you doing video?
Nah, man, we'll just do audio.
Okay, cool.
Good. Yeah.
Good deal.
See, we got a mutual buddy there, Sam. Aries.
Oh, Sam Ayers. Yeah. Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's good shit. So you must be down in Montana too, eh?
No, I'm in Arizona.
Oh, Arizona. Oh, okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I'm originally from New York, and I moved out to Arizona in 1991. So I've been here for freaking...
Been a while.
Yeah,
right on. So I guess maybe we'll just get rolling here, and
sure,
I know we talked about doing we'll talk about some serious stuff, maybe some tactics. I don't know, it kind of seems, I don't want to say irrelevant, but I mean, I know down there you guys got a lot of shit going on. Up here we got lots of stuff going on, so
yeah. And I'd like to hear what the stuff that you guys got going on, because we don't, you know, we don't necessarily get that,
yeah,
that information. And right now, so the organization, Howl for Wildlife, that I'm working with, or actually I'm on the board. Actually, to be completely honest with you, I'm one of the co-founders.
Yeah, I knew that.
And I know we want to start working on stuff in Canada. You know, we're trying to do it a whole North American, you know.
Yeah, that'd be kick-ass for sure, because, I mean, you know, I mean, you've talked about it, I've talked about it, everybody, you know, everybody always says it, but just never seems to take any shape. You know what I mean? Like, hunter unity is huge. And, you know, if we can combine all the hunters in Canada and the US, we'd be unstoppable when it came to issues everywhere. You know what I mean?
We would destroy them.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally.
Oh, yeah.
Shut that off.
Cool, dude. Well, why don't we just start out? Maybe you can, give the Canadian folks here an intro to yourself, and then we'll hop right into Howl for Wildlife, how that all got started, and
sure,
and you know, the mission and all that jazz.
Absolutely. So John Stallone, and I've been hunting since I'm 5 years old. I'm 45 now, so better part of 40 years. Actually got to take my first deer at 5 years old with my dad. He held the gun with me and shot a buck in New York, upstate. If you haven't realized from my accent, I'm originally from New York, and live in Arizona now. I have a wife and three kids who all enjoy hunting and fishing, and including my wife. She's taken a few animals herself. So are my kids. And yeah, I've been in the hunting industry, being a professional, quote unquote, being paid to hunt in some way, shape, or form since like 2001. So I've been at it for a long time. I've had my own podcast since 2005. So however many years that is, I don't even know anymore. That started out, you know, as an extra, you know, an extra feature, yeah, as part of the Hunting Channel Online. So I own the Hunting Channel Online, as well as a few other hunting businesses. I'm a guide and outfitter here in Arizona and South Dakota. I started doing it like one podcast a month just for the members. And then sometime, I believe in 2015, I brought it, you know, onto iTunes. And then I started doing one a week. And I think for a year or two, I did two a week, which was freaking ridiculous. I won't be doing that.
Yeah, so that's a lot of work, man. It's hard to get, like, I was doing one a week for a while there. And it's just like, man, it like everything seems to like just take a back seat when you're, you know, everybody thinks, you know, you talk to guys and like, well, how hard can it be? You just, you know, you get to talk to cool people and you talk about hunting, like that's pretty sweet. Like, how hard can it be? But
yeah,
a lot of stuff behind the scenes that goes on, editing, well, and all that other shit.
Editing, scheduling is always a pain in the ass, right? And then I'm sorry, I should have asked you. I curse like a sailor. I don't know what your rating is. Okay.
Dude, you're not going to swear more than I am. I'm an ex fisherman. So I got, I got a sailor's mouth. So
good. Yeah. Cause I have a really hard time curbing that.
I think the only guy I think that swears more than me is maybe Snyder. So.
Oh yeah. He's pretty good at that. So yeah, I've been an outfitter here in Arizona I've been an outfitter for only a few years, like five or six years, but I've been a guide on and off for probably 15, 20 years. I can't remember, but yeah, I've been all over the place. I've hunted all over really the world. I mean, I've hunted in Canada, Mexico, I've hunted a little bit in Europe and Argentina and Hawaii, and well, Hawaii is not really a different country, but it feels like it's a different country. Aside from your sheeps and, you know, really high dollar hunts, I pretty much hunted everything.
Safe to say you're a veteran in the industry and veteran hunter. We'll leave it at that.
There we go. That's enough. That's enough bio right there. I am one of the co-founders of Howl for Wildlife. You mentioned earlier. And that's some of the stuff we're going to talk about today, but that came about. There was a hunting ban or a bill presented in California, which my hunting partner and now my business partner, Charles Whitwam, he calls me up and he's like, "Hey, they're trying to ban bear hunting here in Arizona or in California." And I'm like, "All right." He's like, "What do you think we should do?" I'm like, "Well, let's start a change.org petition. You know, I'll reach out to all these people that I know." I mean, one of the great things about being a podcast host is I have a lot of influential people that mm-hmm. I've connected with over the years, and I've been doing it for so long that I know a lot of people, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, let's just, you know, push it out to all of them. And then, you know, we'll cast this big net and we'll see what we can do. In like the first 2 days we had like 20,000, and by day five we had like 27,000 signatures.
Nice.
And generated almost $20,000 in donations. And at the time I didn't understand the whole donation process with change.org, but basically when you're donating, you're just giving money to change.org. But anyway, I'll get to that in a moment. So on day five, we're like, "Oh man, we got all these signatures." And not with the signatures, we were also telling people, "Hey, email this congressman." I forgot his name is Wiener. Really funny last name, but his last name is Wiener. And we were calling him and everything. So between the petition and the calling and the emails, he's like, "I don't want anything to do with this." And he was the sole sponsor of the bill. So the bill just died.
He was back. Mission accomplished.
Right. Exactly. We're like, whoa, there we go. So we shut that down because people were still donating. And so a couple more things popped up. We had something in Nevada and then something with Hal. I think it was in Montana. I don't know. I keep forgetting what it is. I got to go back and ask Charles. And we didn't have quite the amount of people, but we had got like 10 to 15,000 for both. And that was enough to get those knocked off the bill too. And I was like, "Oh, yo, there's something to this."
Yeah.
But we generated like $30,000 between the three for change.org. And I'm like, listen, change.org is not really a hunter friendly platform. Number one, if anything, they lean left, and they're, so many anti-hunting petitions on there, it's ridiculous. So I'm like, we can't keep using them. We need to start our own change.org. So we went down that road, actually, you know, paid for, developed a site, and it sucked. It sucked. So that's when kind of Charles stepped in and he was like, "All right, I'm going to do some research." And he just went mad scientist and started talking to all these different advocacy platforms and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, by the end of 2021, we had a site, and he funded the whole thing pretty much. I mean, I mean, it was pretty incredible. He just got super dedicated because he lives in California and California shut down his business basically. So he had a crap ton of time on his hands.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I'm going to do something that I'm passionate about. And we just kind of had all this stuff done and we weren't really ready to launch. It was a little over a month ago. So it was January 11th
that we launched. Is that it? It's only been a month and you guys already got all this shit done.
Crazy, right? Crazy. Jesus. All that stuff done. We have close Badass. To 20,000 members already. Like it's absolutely insane. And we knew it was going to be big like that. Cause we had that kind of a response with the bills, right? From the year before with the petition, we knew that if we made it easy for people to do and there wasn't any obstacles. It was just like, you know, done, 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 click, 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 done. And yes, I did my part. I can go on with my day. Everybody's got, you know, 2 minutes. It's not even, doesn't even take 2 minutes, but everybody's got 2 minutes to do it. But if you ask somebody to like, hey, can you contact your congressman? The intention is there. They want to, but they're never going to do it. I mean, one society today, think about it. If you look at your cell phone and if something doesn't load in like 3 seconds, you start getting aggravated with it. You're on Instagram or something like that and you see a video and the video is like 1 minute, you're like, hey, I don't got time for this. If it's over 30 if it's over 30 seconds, that's it, you know. It's like too much.
So sad, man. It's so right? true and so oh my sad God.
And it's weird because I realize it all the time, even though I've adapted that myself. I find myself getting upset with it. It's like, shit, I was on my desktop this morning and like one of the pages, I was trying to look up some parts for my construction company. And I'm like, why is this not loading? And it was literally like 3-4 seconds. And then it finally loaded. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I find myself getting upset.
Everyone does. I'm guilty of it. Everyone. Like, it's just sad.
And I was born in the 70s, you know, like there was no internet.
Me too, man.
I was used to all this, you know, stuff not being there. Now that I've been habituated, like I find myself reaching for my phone when I have no reason to reach for my phone.
Yeah.
So that's what we become as a society, you know?
Yeah, man.
That's nice.
I feel you.
Yeah. So we took that into consideration when we built the platform and we wanted to make it so that all these people with good intentions didn't really have an excuse anymore, you know? And they can basically just go on there, take action very quickly. And the platform itself is very fast acting as well, because we can use it across social media. And the idea was taking a page out of the anti-hunters book. You know, we are the money that we're generating after pays for the cost to run the website, which is considerably high, unfortunately, because of it's we are connected to every single decision maker in the United States right now.
Mm-hmm.
So any bill, any state, any city at any level, we're connected to them.
And that's awesome. That's what we need. That's what it takes though. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Exactly. Unfortunately, that's costs a lot of money to do, but we knew that was necessary. So other than that, once we cover those expenses, the idea is to go to education of the non-hunting public, because look at what the anti-hunters have been doing since Bambi came out, and maybe probably before that, with Walt Disney and all that. They have portrayed hunters as the villain in mainstream media forever.
Everything that is shown, hunters are the villain. Doesn't matter. Like,
exactly
everything.
Yeah. I challenge you to find a movie, you know, that has, I'm pretty sure there is one or two out there, but that I don't know of them, but I'm sure there is a couple. But every movie, and I really hit home with me like a few years ago. I was flipping through, I don't remember what it was, probably Netflix or something. But, and I started watching this movie with, oh my God, now I forgot her name. Little blonde chick. That sounded really bad, but. Reese Witherspoon. And I think it was Reese Witherspoon, if I remember right. And she was like on this hike across the Oregon Trail or something.
Yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. And I can't remember all the details because I stopped watching the movie after this part. And she runs into these hunters and like that are elk hunting. And they're, one of them's drinking a beer and they're backpacking. And they're just kind of shady. They're like shady dudes. And they're like, are these guys going to rape her? Are these guys going to rape her? And I'm like, oh my God. Like this is like what the non-hunting public views us as. This is what we are.
I was watching that same movie and I was like, and I was yelling at the TV. And my wife's like, wait, would you calm the fuck down? And I'm like, look at this. First of all, these guys are backpack hunting elk with a beer.
Nobody.
Like, get real.
Who's going to carry that weight? I'm sure as hell not carrying a six pack in the back. But true, right? Like, no way. But yeah, we're looked at as guys driving around in pickup trucks, drinking beer, shooting out the back, you know, just willy nilly at anything that moves or Elmer Fudd. It's all, either way, it's all negative, right? We're not put in a positive light. And which is the sad thing. So the anti-hunting, or excuse me, not the anti-hunting, but the non-hunting public doesn't know. And I'm not exactly sure how it all works in Canada and how you guys have your what the model is up there, but I know the North American, you know, model for wildlife conservation that we have here in the United States, these people don't understand that they can go into a national forest and see elk and see deer and all these things were all because of the efforts of hunters and the funding that comes from the Pittman Robertson and all these other organizations out there that are developing habitat and so on and so forth. So our goal is to mainstream, do hug a hunter type programs and so on and so forth. We're actually working on getting a billboard right now in San Francisco of all places, you know, that is going to be like, you know, hug a hunter. You can thank, cause you see blacktail or whatever, you know, that type of scenario, put some stats up there because we want to address people who just don't know,
which is huge. Like that's step one. Sadly, and unfortunately our right to hunt and fish lies in the hands of the non-hunting community, not the anti-hunters, not the politicians. It's unfortunately it's in the non-hunting community because if politicians, they do what gets them votes, what wins the election. And
exactly whatever makes them look the best is what they're going to do. And at face value, if they see a bill that comes across that says, you know, no bear hunting or whatever, they're like, oh, cool, I'm going to save cute and fuzzy bears. And that's going to make me look good. But they don't know the science. They don't understand that, you know, the ramifications if they were to have gotten rid of that. And as soon as you let them know that, they're like, whoa, I don't even want to have anything to do with this. Mm-hmm. Unless they're an anti-hunting person already.
Yeah.
That's a little different. Yeah. But for the most part, it's,
you know, I don't come across a lot of anti-hunters. You know what I mean? But I come across a lot of non-hunters. Like,
yeah,
you know, 10 to 1 non-hunters over hunters over anti-hunters. But
oh yeah. Sure.
You know, it's making those connections, talking to those people. But you know, Howl for Wildlife, what you guys got going on, pretty cool. And it's unique. It's not like those other. It's not like nothing against all the other hunt organizations, you know, they do a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
A few things I don't like is that, you know, you're required to have a membership. It's not a requirement.
Correct.
And like the whole platform you guys are running on is completely different. It's unique. It's like nothing that I've seen before anyways. So maybe we can talk about that. Just what your guys' platform is like, what your guys' goals are and like how people sign up.
Sure. So, like you said, there's no membership required. Starting in the next couple of weeks, depending, I don't know when this comes out or not, but we actually will have a membership. We've been working. And the reason why we didn't want to launch the membership thing is because we want the membership. If you are a paid member, so we're always going to have free membership. And we might change the names of these, but right now it's, if you're going to be a PAC member, it's free. And as a PAC member, if you go to the website and you join as a PAC member, you are put into our incentive program automatically. In our incentive program, every time you take an action, we are going to reward you with X amount of points based on that action. Okay. And that action could be you recruiting somebody, could be you donating, could be you physically signing a petition or sending an email or getting on a phone call or joining a fish and game meeting, yada, yada, yada. The list kind of goes on. So you accumulate points. And as you accumulate points, once you get to a certain threshold of points, you're automatically put in for randomized drawing of with our partners for free gear. We are working on some stuff right now where you can trade those points for a certain amount of discount to purchase gear. And with the paid membership, all that stuff gets sexier. And there will be free hunt giveaways and stuff like that, you know, kind of to reward those people that are helping us. Yeah. But you don't have to become a member at all, period, to take action. You just put your name, you can say, hey, you know what? I'm interested in this one. I mean, this goes against what we're trying to do. We're trying to get everybody to care about everything, mm-hmm. but we know it's not going to happen, but it's just,
yeah.
You know, like for
yeah, instance, I get it. I mean, unfortunately, it'd be nice if there was no like prefix in front of hunters, and you know, there were no whitetail hunters, there was no elk hunters, there was no bear hunters, there was just hunters. Do you know what I mean? And it's really hard to get like up here a deer hunter in Ontario, mm-hmm. a whitetail deer hunter in Ontario. To give a shit about a moose and caribou hunt that's potentially going to be closed now in northeastern BC.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have the same, you know, obviously we have the same issue here. Is what does a guy in South Carolina who hunts hogs and deer out of a tree stand give two craps about, you know, an elk hunter in New Mexico? It just doesn't, like, it doesn't compute.
And yeah, exactly. But I mean, if you put it on a long enough timeline, it's gonna, because it's just
exactly,
it's just one strike, right? It's one chip.
It's a war of attrition or death by a million cuts. Way you want to put it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, no matter how many times you talk about the low-lying fruit, it's just like people, they just can't see it. Like, you know what I mean? It has to be at their doorstep to realize the fact that this does affect them, which is really sad. And
right.
I wish it wasn't like that.
Well, I through stuff like this, through conversations like this and podcasts like you, we are reaching people and we're starting to get a shift. Mm-hmm. We're starting to get a shift. And I think it's huge. I mean, think about it right now. If we were to have, there's, and I don't know if this includes Canada. I think this is a North American number, but I believe 15 or 16 million hunters. I think it's just the United States. I think
probably just the United States.
I think if we add Canada, that goes even. You know.
Yeah, you might have another million. I don't know. Maybe not that many.
A million hunters in Canada.
I don't know the stat, but I mean, we only have 35 million people here. So
I know, but I think you believe me. I believe it's over 5 million.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I'd have to look it up. I should know that. I mean, like, realistically.
Yeah, I feel like I should know that too, but I'm going to have to look that up now. That's going to bother me. You know, so let's just say we got out of the two countries, there's 20 million people, right? 20 million of us. Could you imagine? There wouldn't be a bill that ever came up. Like, every time, you know, something popped up somewhere, that person got 20 million emails or 20 million, like, you
would, oh, dude, it'd be unstoppable. It. Yeah. It'd break be like it. Over game, over game, like done.
I want, no joke, if we can get 15 to 20% of those 20 million, I still think we'd be unstoppable.
Right.
I mean, that sounds like a lot,
but
in reality, I mean, is it really that hard? Like, it shouldn't be
that hard.
Exactly. It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. Yeah. It shouldn't be.
I don't know why it is, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah. It shouldn't be. 1.3 million hunters in Canada.
That's it. Oh my God.
15.2 million in license holders, in the United States.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, that's still a lot, you know what I mean? But the thing is, when an issue comes up here in Canada, we don't get even, you know what I mean? Like we don't get that $1.3 million.
Yeah. It's supporters. Hard to activate that many people, right?
We don't even get 13,000 supporters, and it's sad, especially here in British Columbia. Like British Columbia has more game to like over the counter tags, just species to hunt than anywhere else you're going to find in North America. It's insane. Yep. And we have more shit and more crap to deal with up here, and the least amount of support from hunters. Like when they took the grizzly bear hunt away, there was very few people that stood up and said, hey, like if this gets taken away, we're not going to stand about it. I mean, everybody grumbles now 4 years later, but a lot of good that's going to do, right? So
yeah, I was listening to a seminar by Dr. Geist, who just passed.
Yeah, Val. Yeah.
Yeah. He's
a good man. Yeah. Yeah. That's sad. I talked to him like a week before he passed away.
Really? Wow. Yeah. The crazy thing is I found out it sucked. I was actually trying to set up a podcast with him, and that's how I found out he had passed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even know.
He's a beauty. He's just a beautiful man. He was just such a good guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, he was talking about Canada, and he was talking about the, now I forgot the term that he uses, but like predator pits. Thank you.
Yeah.
About the predator pits and that were occurring since the 4 year ban of grizzly bear hunting, in that short of a time, how it had shifted the landscape, you know? And I'm like, wow, that's nuts. You know?
Yeah. So Pacific Wild, they're an anti-hunting group, and like they just portrayed the grizzly bear hunt as just a trophy hunt where guys go and shoot the trophy, do a grip and grin and leave it. That's right. It. Like it was on an LEH draw system first. So like you had to put in for draws just to get that hunt. And I mean, I put in for years, I never got it, but I know guys who did, and they took the hide out. They'd even took the meat out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they didn't treat it any different than a black bear.
Yeah.
But I mean, they portrayed this hunt, this specific hunt, as a grip and grin hunt, the epitome of a trophy hunt, and that we were killing all these thousands of bears a year just for a picture and just for a like on Instagram. The province allowed us to take 2% of the grizzly bears, which was like nothing.
Uh-huh.
And so they'd portray this down in Victoria and Vancouver. And then the general public said, yeah, you know what? We don't agree with this at all. And they put pressure on the politicians, and that was it. And it happened quick, and it was over. It was done. Then they're like, okay, well, we're right now we're implementing an immediate ban on all grizzly bear hunting. And right. That was done.
Right. Yeah. So that's their main tactic.
Yeah.
Main tactic is all perception. Right.
Yeah. And a lot of hunters, well, one of the things that's really cool about HAL for Wildlife, a lot of the hunters didn't even know about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the cool things about social media is that, you know, now you get quick access to a lot of these things that you weren't aware of at all. Like right now in BC, there's the government secretly is trying to trade a whole bunch of our hunting. They're trying to trade a whole bunch of our public land.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to turn it into resource development. So what they're going to do is they're going to shut down access to all residents of British Columbia, which includes like camping, hiking trails, hunting, fishing, into a big chunk of northeastern BC. And then they're going to shut down the caribou and moose hunt in the process of doing it. And so they tried to like secretly slip this under the rug, but somebody caught wind of it. They put it on Facebook, and now luckily it's blown up. Like a lot of people, you referenced the grizzly bear hunt, like, hey man, if we're not talking about bear hunt, we're talking about moose and caribou hunting. And not only that, like we're talking camping spots being down, public walking trails, all this shit, right? And like, so we're hoping
you get a lot of outdoorsy people to get on.
Yeah. So, and you know, that's what I went on Facebook right away. And I was like, I started approaching hiking groups. I started approaching like, hey, are you guys aware of what's going on in this? Like, I'm going to be honest. I'm a hunter. I support hunters, but this is something that affects everybody, not just the people who are hunting and fishing, utilizing the land and the resource for stuff that they like. It's going to affect everybody. So, hopefully it gets some traction.
Right.
Well, that's one thing I love about HAL for Wildlife is like how you guys have it set up. We're like, I was looking at the website again today and I signed up, and it's like, it shows specific issues that are going on right now. And like you click on it, and it shows exactly what's going on. And then like, it gives you an opportunity like, hey, you know, I want to support this, or I want to support all of them, or, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you
guys super easy.
Yeah.
You go to the Action Center, you put your name and your email in there, and you click, and you're, you're pretty much done. Yeah. If you want to, so the, like for, if it's an email type, you can actually highlight the words on the email, or you can change, you know, you can change words. You can erase everything that's said there and write your own email if you wanted to. It's really neat. And the cool thing about it is it's not, doesn't come as a canned email. It doesn't come, keep coming from our site. You know, they don't get 9 million, you know, emails yeah. from Howl for Wildlife. That actual email comes direct from you. It uses yeah. your email address.
Yeah. yeah. Which makes a difference, I think, because, you know, if a politician's sitting there and he gets a, you know, 9,000 emails from one person, then it's going to be like, okay, well, this is just one person just constantly yeah, yeah. sending, but all exactly. of a sudden, if you start seeing the way they're looking at it as votes, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is like, okay, well, I got 9,000 votes here that, you know, they feel this way. So maybe we better revisit this or think strongly against what we're doing, or else we're not going to have a seat here next year.
Exactly. And that's the point. And that's what we need to do. Yeah. And I'd like to, maybe we could do this off the podcast, but we could talk about, I'd like to figure out how we can help out Canada and how we can, you know, jump on board with this particular issue
yeah.
coming up. Cause you know, we Dude, don't,
that'd be badass for sure.
We don't hear about it, but let's, you know, here's the thing. Like, I know, I mean, I've hunted Canada probably eight or nine times
mm-hmm.
that I can think of. And all over the country, not just, I've been to BC, I've been to Saskatchewan, I've been, on the East Coast. I went bear hunting on the East Coast. I've been pretty much, you know, as much as you can be in nine times, I've been all over the place in Canada, you know, and sure. I think that there's a lot of people that would like to go hunting there. So I don't know if the decision makers, there would care as much because we're not going to be voting for them, but they have to understand that when they have to look at, well, once Canada decides they want to open their borders back up and start allowing travel, you know, correctly and whatever. But that's a lot of revenue coming from another country, you know, into your, yeah. into well, your country.
The, like, the way the thing, okay, that, like, yeah. like, well, like, with Canada and the US, like we're like with a lot of issues and a lot of, well, like a lot of everything, we're behind you guys in a lot of ways, right? Like we are so far behind you guys in wildlife management, it'd make your head spin.
The last time I had a conversation was about 4 or 5 years ago with another gentleman. I think he lived up in, I think he was in BC also. Yeah. But, and he was explaining it to me. So I know a little bit. He made it sound like you guys were always behind the eight ball.
Always.
In funding, especially.
Funding. Well, like,
because of the way it's structured.
Yeah, like the way our government is structured. So like, so what it does is it takes the money that hunters generate and it throws into a general kitty, and then they spend it on whatever, right? Fixing potholes in downtown Vancouver, or whatever the hell they do with the money, right? Or, you know, each one gets a 10% bonus each year, or whatever the hell they do with, however they waste the money. But that, you know, that's the point. Like, we don't have stuff like the Pittman Robertson or Dingle Johnson. Those are amazing tools and assets to have at your disposal.
You got to petition somebody now. Now's the time to do it. Now that everybody's so woke with everything that people want to get behind something that is, you know, they could be a do-gooder. Mm-hmm. Now would be the time, man. Spearhead it. You got the platform. You got the ears. You got the people. Just get something going, and then, you know, we'll try to throw the weight of Howl for Wildlife behind it. And, you know, you get a couple of other organizations that operate up there and
that's what,
as soon as you know it, then you got like a new excise tax or something, even, or, you know, I don't know how most people view this, but everybody that I've ever talked to, I said, hey, what if we, I mean, this was specific to Arizona. I'm like, what if we just raise, you know, every tag or every application fee, which was even better. Every application fee, $5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't give a shit. You know, if you want to charge me an extra $5, I put out freaking $30,000 a year for tags. You know, I get most of it back, but I put out probably that much to, you know, to see if I could draw, you know, two tags or whatever. But the whole idea is like that $5, maybe that $5 can be a new thing that's just fun, that's specific to you know, habitat development or species propagation, whatever the case may be, access. I mean, I don't think you guys got a whole big problem with access right now, but it sounds like you might.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have
something like that would be huge, I think.
Yeah. Like our access issue is we have too much access.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like we have like British Columbia. It's huge. Like just British Columbia alone, it's huge. And 94% public lands, which is roughly the size of Texas, is public, is free to hunt, right. Hunt, fish, whatever you want. But the problem we have is just goes back to our management. We have like access roads, like say they clear cut an area, they clear cut it, they leave all the logging roads intact. They don't deactivate anything. And then wolves will use those and predators will use those. And like that, this kind of gets into Valerius Geis our, you know, discussion on predator creates predator pits, which is hard on the ungulates. Yeah. So, I mean, it just comes down to our just bad management. But going back to like what we talked about before with, you know, if we can get Canadians on board with Howl for Wildlife, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's 1.3 million people, but now all of a sudden you're getting, it's going to be emails in an inbox. I don't think that just because if it's say I'm emailing somebody, a politician in Arizona, he's just going to see my name. He's not going to see where I'm from. He, you know, with, you know what I mean? Like I can guarantee he's not going through and reading 9,000 emails.
No, for sure. For sure.
So
no, we get that obviously. You know, it's part of our tactic, but it's also at least here in the United States, and I'm sure that it will affect them, you guys there in Canada as well. But we have, when they do read it and they know it's not from their state, they still look at it because we have so much, especially now in the last 5 years. Everybody hunts out of state.
Mm-hmm, right.
Everybody travels to hunt. And they look at it as, well, that's a tourist. That's also a tourist that's going to come here. Yeah. He cares about that because he's going to come here to hunt that. Or he has been here to hunt that. Or she has been here to hunt that. And, you know, I think with everybody, and we just need the numbers, you know, we just need to get
it. Oh, absolutely. Started. Yeah. Absolutely. Like we talked about before, right? That's 16.5 million people.
Right.
You know, that's a force. That's an army, man.
Yeah. And it's actually, we outnumber anti-hunting.
Yeah, absolutely.
We always have. We've always outnumbered them by, I think, 5%. And it's always been said, oh, there's 10% and 10% and 80% in the middle, but it's not. We actually outnumber. And I know why they say it that way. It's just, you know, to put a little fire underneath.
Yeah, everybody's absolutely. Head, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it because I don't want you to be active. I'm saying it that if you are active, you know, and that's a funny word, active, you know, but I had this guy email us back. He's like, because we were, one of the emails we sent back out was like, you know, we need hunters to be activists. And his answer was, activism is code for libtard. And I'm like, this guy's a freaking moron. Like you need to be active. You can't sit back on your ass. You have to be active.
Have to be.
In order for stuff to happen. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You can't be a passive, you know, just go about your life. Those days are freaking way the hell gone.
You can't do that with anything in life.
You know,
yeah, like, anything in life. You got to be active, man.
Exactly.
Anything you do, you got to be active. Yeah. The days of, just sitting around and hoping it's going to fall in your lap are fucking over, man. Long over. Right.
Well, you know, and here, and I don't know if there's a lot of bleed over from this or not, but I remember when I first took my very first hunter safety course when I was like 9 years old in New York. And part of the curriculum, part of the course was they taught us to be as recluse as possible. And some of this is good because this translates to now today into what you do on social media and stuff like that. But the message was be quiet, basically, you know, don't show off your deer. Don't do this. Don't do that. don't talk to people about hunting. Don't like it's, it was like very like
discreet. Hey, yeah.
Just be discreet. And they'll leave you alone. Like that was the message.
Yeah.
I don't think we can be discreet anymore. No. You know, like I don't think we can be that anymore.
No, not with, I mean, not with Instagram and Facebook and all that. You can't, I mean, it's impossible. It's going to be absolutely, it's impossible. And you know, there's the argument of where like, you shouldn't have to hide to be a hunter. And I agree with that. You shouldn't have to hide or apologize for being a hunter. It's just impossible to hide it. Now guys just, they're proud and they're happy and they're stoked and they want to show the people what they just killed. And I mean, I get it.
Social media is the equivalent of us back in 1980 driving into the city, you know, center of town or whatever, and showing off the buck we just shot.
Exactly. That's a good analogy. Yeah. Exactly.
And now,
yeah.
And now it's on a, you know, on a just giant.
Well, that exactly scale. that used to be what you do, right? You'd right. show up and you go to the gas station, you have your big elk or your deer in the back, and then you'd sit there and you'd sit, hang around and wait for everyone to get gas, and they'd be like, "Oh, hey, weird, look at that!" Yeah, and you start bullshit, and then the next guy would pull up and spend half the day down there.
It's, right.
Exactly.
And before that, it was you bringing food back to the house and your family coming and praising you for bringing home meat. And probably before that, it was, you know, bringing it in the whole community, the camp would come in and, you know, praise you. Like, so it's part of what we do.
It's part of our culture for sure. Right, absolutely. Exactly.
So, but you know, I guess what we need to realize now, and you started touching on this, that, there's been a lot of messages put out there, you know, don't show things that are untasteful, and you know, don't, maybe not the grip and grin thing is kind of somewhat frowned upon now. I say, if you're going to do grip and grin stuff, which I do a lot of, you also got to show the meat. You also got to show the pack out. You got to show, you know,
So the whole process.
Right. So that when somebody sees that and then they swipe to the next photo, it's, you know, you processing the meat, or you carrying the meat out, or a meal that was made from it. It's like, so I try to put a lot of that stuff out too.
Yeah, that's good.
So that people, you know, if you go to my blog has, sometimes I'll do a story and then the story of how I turn that, you know, meat into a meal or whatever. And I do a lot of recipes and stuff like that. I've kind of in the last, I mean, I've always been a amateur chef, you know, always been into cooking and whatever, but the last like 5-10 years on the wild game side, I've really tried to up my game. And now I'm like, where sometimes I would eat things just because I was almost obligated. Like I felt like I'm this thing's like, and I didn't really enjoy some of it. I was like, I learned how to cook things much better. And I was like, oh wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
You know? Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I need to work on my game cooking immensely. My wife's a chef by trade. So she kind of like, she's always sitting back judging me, whatever I do. And then, like, it doesn't, like, you know, I pulled an elk roast out one night working away on it. She's just like standing over my shoulder and you can hear her like grinding her teeth in the back. She just wants to dive in. And I'm like, do you want to do this? She's like, yes, get out of my way. Get out of my kitchen. I'm like, okay. But you know, she makes it and our whole family loves it. Like even the kids, they love it. Like we don't eat beef, you know, my wife, little bit of chicken, but other than that, like we just eat what's in our freezer and that's it. And my kids have grown up on it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I would love to say that I'm that way, but we're not. I mean, we definitely eat plenty of game meat, but I give away a lot of it because I know. And that's the same thing too, right?
Like that's the exact same thing too. You're getting just like somebody else is getting it.
Right. It's, exactly.
You know, I give a lot to, you know, the guys that work for me, neighbors and stuff. And like, and they absolutely love it. And they're not, not hunters, right? They're non-hunters. But like now, you know, it's funny, like my neighbor that lives below me, he had at the beginning before I moved in, he was on the fence about hunting. He didn't, you know, he didn't like the idea of going just killing animals. And, you know, he kind of had a misperception about it, you know, and then like I brought him into, like, he still doesn't, he comes into my house and he doesn't really like, you know, the look we got going on here with, you know, a head or a mount on every single wall in the house. So, which is fine. You know, he's opened up to it and he loves the meat and he has a lot different, he's got a lot different perception of hunters now, than he did when we moved in. And that, you know, that's one person, right? He, well, that, now when he talks to somebody else, he's telling them, say, well, yeah, actually, you know what? I know a hunter and you know what, you're actually wrong. It's not just about that. It's, you know, they care a lot about the meat and they do, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a process and it's right. Not just going around drinking beer, shooting at stuff.
Yep, so. Exactly. And that's actually one of the messages that I've been trying to spread. And I've issued a challenge here. I did it on my Instagram and I challenged everybody to get one non-hunting person.
Nice. That's a good
spark up a dialogue with them.
Cool.
And explain to them how conservation works. What actually goes into a hunt. Like if somebody, I always wanted to do, I used to have a TV show, for like 14 years. And I always wanted to do like a documentary style thing on a mainstream media that, and I guess kind of Mediator does something like that now, but it's not, I wanted to show from start to finish. I wanted to call it the season, what went into all the hard work I put into the practice, all the, you know, tinkering with my bow and my gear, mm-hmm. this and that, and scouting and obsessing and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then the actual trial and tribulations of the actual hunt. I guarantee you, if somebody was to be on my, you know, like my elk hunt from Idaho last year, and I think we averaged like 12 miles a day, something ridiculous. Yeah. Like we were just, dude, my feet were so freaking screwed up by the end of that trip. I was like, I don't even know how I did it. And if they were to go and see, like, oh my God, how much money you spent to get here. How much effort goes into that? That's like the most expensive.
Oh, dude. If my wife knew how much money I spent on, I wouldn't have a wife.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, it's just, they don't have a concept of it at all. They revert back to those two guys drinking a beer that we're going to rape Reese Witherspoon. You know?
Yeah.
Like that's the perception. So
yeah.
It's on us. It really is. It's on us to change the narrative, to get people to understand. I've done it a lot of times where I've been in a large group and, you know, somebody points out that I'm a bow hunter or a hunter or whatever. And I always see it as an opportunity. Like, hey, the first thing I do is like, do you guys know where, you know, funding comes from for wildlife conservation? And everybody will raise their hand and everybody says taxes. And then you're like, no, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. And they're like flabbergasted because they don't know. And they just never realized. And they're like, their perception is that hunters hate animals and we just want to kill them. Right. Mm-hmm. They don't know that we're some of the biggest stewards and, you know, lovers.
Absolutely. Absolutely, like, man.
I mean, listen, there's bad seeds in every group.
Yep.
There's those guys that just love, they're just got bloodlust like crazy and they just love to shoot things and see things. So like there is that. Nobody's going to lie there. But it's a very, very small population, you know, very, very small percentage of people. Within the
but you know what, I feel like those way. The guys that are really doing shit like that are doing it, they're doing it even when they're not supposed to be doing it, you know?
Oh,
what
yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah,
I those have are the, a, those I've
are
got a
poachers, those are the yeah. criminals, yeah, for yeah. sure, absolutely, you know. And I'm sure there is a, you know, another small percentage that just, you know, they're just in it for the adrenaline rush, whatever, but mm-hmm. For the most part, I would say the majority of hunters all are like you and I, that we're, what we're talking about. You know, we care about the habitat. We care about the animals. We care about what happens with the food. We care about the process, and it's all encompassing, and it's not just about one thing or whatever.
No, exactly, man. It's definitely, and that's the thing too, is like, I mean, I kind of feel, you know, as hunters, even the last little while, we've evolved, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when I see mistreated animals, I get absolutely, like, I generally get pissed off. I get angry. Do you know what I mean? Like, I watched a show on Netflix last week. It was called The Ivory Game, and it was about what they're doing to the elephants in Africa. And I was fucking mad. You know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah, it's terrible.
I know a lot of people would be like, well, I don't understand. Like, I don't see the correlation. I don't understand how come that makes you mad, but then you can go kill a deer. You don't get it because you're not doing it.
Right.
Like, you're just not doing, you're not seeing the whole picture. You're not seeing the time. I care about that deer more than you do, way more than you do.
Yep.
You don't see the time that it goes in. You don't see me outside shooting my bow every day. You don't see me getting up at 4 a.m. training every day for a backpack hunt year round. And this isn't like I'm getting up 2 weeks before the hunt. I do this year round, right? Donating time and money, lots of time, time that I'm not spending with my kids.
Yep.
Times and taken away from work, money. There's so much that goes into it.
Absolutely.
What's really cool about what you're talking earlier about that show or that documentary, doing something like that style would be just badass. There is sort of platforms out there that do that, but nothing like to the extent like what you were talking about. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would love to put something together like that, and I might still, you know, in the future, we'll see. And if I could get enough people to care to get the funding for it, you know, it's kind of a hard endeavor to do on your own. But yeah, I would love to do that. You know, you're talking about this, and you were talking about the elephants, and made me think. I had this video, and I put it out there, and I can't find where the hell I put it out there. I think it was before YouTube. So it was on like one of the first video platforms. I don't remember, but anyway, I got to look. I think the hard drive that I had it on was one of the ones that got ruined in a flood that I had. But it was an antelope hunt that I was on, and I had this giant buck. And he went to go cross a fence. And you know, antelope don't like to jump fences.
Yep.
He tried to go under, and he got his prongs caught on the fence. And I literally could have walked right up to him and just shot him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a giant buck. He'd probably still be my biggest buck. Because he was in the 80s. He was a, you know, fantastic specimen. And you know, instead, I went over there and I took a stick and I unhooked his prong, and you know, he scrambled.
That's awesome. Out. Yeah.
And I have video. This I do have up on my YouTube. It, my cousin Anthony and my friend Tony, they were Anthony and Tony. They were cow hunting. Well, actually one of them had a cow tag, one of them had a bull tag. And they came up to a cow that was caught in the fence, like, and they let him go. They let her go. You know, it's like, if it was just about putting wrapping a tag around something, stuff like this wouldn't be happening. Like,
exactly. You know? Exactly. What you described there, that is the epitome right there of fair chase. Fair chase is an ethical part of being a good hunter.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys that would do the same thing. And there's also some guys that, you know, they just go up and put an arrow in that buck. But I mean, that goes back to what you said earlier, whereas, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, we're not there yet. I don't think it's, you know, unachievable where we can get everybody on the same page and get all hunters to think like, hey, let's look at the end game here. You know what I mean? Like, let's think longevity. Let's, you know,
do we want to keep doing this for as long
as
we
can? Well, and you do want, like, yeah, exactly. Let's think about our grandkids having this opportunity. Right.
You know, and there are times where, you know, an animal, you know, that animal is probably not going to make it. So,
it makes sense.
So I've had that too. So just this past year in South Dakota, I end up deciding to put, you know, my tag. I still had to hunt him. He was still very capable of eluding me. Matter of fact, we had three cracks at him. There was a mule deer buck, but the neighbor, when I found him, the neighbor, he had come over from a neighboring property. I have private land up there, and he was bleeding and his leg was broken. So he had taken a low shot to the leg, basically. And, you know, at first I was like, I think he'll be fine. My partner, Charles, he had stalked him and he got away from Charles, you know, he was like 20 something yards, but he couldn't get a shot. And he, you know, he busted and he actually ran. And I was like, you know, but he ran on three legs. And then over the course of the week, we kept seeing him. And he, at that point, he had does with him. He lost the does. And he had another scar on his face the next time I saw him. So it means like another buck probably, you know, confronted
him. He was taking a run at him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could tell, you know, he was doing progressively worse every time I saw him. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go shoot this buck.
And, good on you. Yeah. That's good. I mean, that goes back to
on him and I got him. And, you know, when I saw it, I was like, oh man, he had like gangrene on that one. You know,
he wouldn't have made the winner anyway. And I mean, that's a solid move as a hunter, right? Like that's what you should strive to do, right? You don't want to say, okay, well, I'll leave that buck because that, you know, I want a better buck, but like that deer is going to die no matter what. It wouldn't have made the winner, right? That's a fact. Instead of you going and taking another animal, you know, there's two dead deer. You just went and took the one that was going to die anyway. To me, that's a solid move. Right.
Yeah. Like, I mean, not to give myself a pat on the back, you know, about it. Now, believe me, there was a certain level of disappointment in me, but I felt like at the same time, it was something I had to do. And absolutely. I was disappointed because I had been kind of patterning some bigger bucks that I really, really wanted to, you know, to take a crack at, you know, and I, in some ways I felt like I was, And this is just a human in me. I felt like I was settling, but I knew I was doing the right thing.
Yeah. You know, awesome.
Thing is hard to do, you know?
Yeah. Like that speaks volume to you as a hunter and as a person, but that's the kind of stuff that we need. Right. And that's the kind of stuff that you need to be talked about and spoken about because like, you know, if you did it the other way, just opens you to be a target for the anti-hunters or just hunters in general. They do that. You know, somebody will see it or hear about it and hunters or anti-hunters will be like, look at this. Just prime example of, you know, the trophy hunting. You did the exact opposite. So good on you, dude.
It's a tough decision and it's a tough thing all the way around because I think that type of situation could be easily misconstrued no matter what. You know, you can talk about the guy before me instead of me, you know. He took a shot that he shouldn't have. Like, we don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I didn't see the shot. I don't know if he had buck fever or their branch deflected, whatever the case may be, you know, stuff happens. You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's tough to,
that's the unfortunate thing about hunting it. But I mean, that deer could have had a run in with a rattlesnake or something else, if it wasn't a hunter. Do you know what I mean? Like
true.
It's life, man. It's not pretty, but I mean, it's, you know, I think we got to look at it, you know, at the way that you took it myself. So. Cool, dude. Well, you know what, man, it's been good chatting with you. I'm glad we hooked up there.
Yeah, likewise.
Definitely.
So more about the, you know, those issues you guys got going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's stay in touch here and we'll keep following up on everything you guys got and I'll keep slamming out stuff for Howl for Wildlife, but,
appreciate it.
Where can we find you guys?
It's HOWL for Wildlife. So howlforwildlife.org. Be careful. There is another Howl for some Wildlife or Howl out there. That's kind of an anti-hunting.
Yeah. I seen that. That when I first clicked it in, that's what came up as howlforwildlife.net.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And you know, sort of a little bit of a strategic thing on our part to kind of mask ourselves a little bit. You know, you always hear about green decoys.
Yeah.
We kind of wanted to do the opposite a little bit. That's why we chose you know, howl and the wolf as, you know, because the wolf is very polarizing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Lots of controversy topic around wolves.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of a strategic thing, but at the same time, you know, we don't want to confuse the hunters. We just want to confuse everybody else. But yeah, just go to howlforwildlife.org. You can become a member for free. You could donate, be part of that incentive program we talked about, or you could just take action. Just go to the Action Center. I think there's a few of them on there right now, and we're going to see if we can work it out where we can help out some of the Canadian efforts as well.
Yeah, that'd be badass. So how does it work? So if somebody, a member, they get wind of something, they just notify you guys, and you guys look into it, and then you throw it up on the webpage, and then it just, it's available right for everyone to see.
I mean, probably the easiest thing is to hit me up on Instagram. So it's just John Stallone, and okay, just send me a direct message. Say, hey, we got this thing going on here, and would you look into it? Now, I'm gonna kind of give you a little caveat here. Is Hal only gets involved, because I keep getting messages about things that are more people problems. We only get involved when it is a ban, or I shouldn't say only a ban, only when it directly affects wildlife management, where it goes against science-based wildlife management, where it can hurt wildlife in general. Right. So just recently here, and now I got involved in this personally, but I didn't involve Hal directly, was they were trying to get rid of, or they were trying to make bow hunters wear hunter orange in Colorado, because of one moron who shot somebody during the muzzleloader season. They won that, by the way, but that's not something Hal will get involved in.
Yeah, right.
But if it has some way where it's going to take away access, or it's going to ruin habitat, or it's going to affect wildlife management and sound scientific principles, we're all about it.
Right. So more conservation focused efforts.
Right. Yes. Yes. Gotcha. It's not, we're not, Sportsman's Alliance deals with pretty much anything that is
cool,
directly related to hunting and fishing. But it's more about the wildlife itself and following the North American model of conservation. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Okay, dude, that's great. I'm going to shut this off here. Thanks again. I'll get this out right away so everybody can listen to it and get out and sign up and get the ball rolling.
Appreciate it, man. Really good. Thank you.
Okay, brother. Good talking, eh? Talk to you later. Okay, I want to thank everyone again for tuning in to another episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast, which is coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoors Collective. This episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Vortex Optics, the best in optics, period. Backroads Maps, never get lost with Backroads Maps. And AKU Boots, you owe it to your feet. Quick shout out to Howl for Wildlife. If you guys are not familiar with Howl for Wildlife, make sure you head on over to howlforwildlife.org. Become a member, doesn't cost you anything. They got tons of great stuff going on, and we're going to be working with them getting some Canadian issues put on their platform. Thanks again, everybody.